But first, wasn't the digital economy supposed to fix all this? And computers would do the boring jobs while people did the stuff that's fun and that matters. Instead, you know, we've got workers replaced by robots, taxi drivers losing out to Uber, and all those disruptive new media companies. Yeah, they're all laying off creative staff. So what went wrong? Media theorist Doug Rushkoff has a word for it: growth. Steve Paulson sat down to talk with him about his new book, Throwing Rocks at the Google Bus.
Doug, the subtitle of your new book is How Growth Became the Enemy of Prosperity, which I have to say sounds counterintuitive. Most people would say that growth goes hand in hand with prosperity.
Yeah.
So why is growth the enemy of prosperity?
You know, you would think it goes hand in hand, wouldn't you? I would have. The reason why is that for the most part now, companies grow by extracting money from people and places and some viable marketplace, and then store that growth in share price. And when it's stuck in share price, it ends up really stuck there, almost like a frozen asset that they can't get back into circulation.
So you're saying the companies don't plow that money back into the business itself?
Right. And that's because they're punished, really, if they do that. You know, particularly in the digital economy, there's a real stigma associated with earnings. So you can have a company like Twitter, which makes $500 million a quarter, right? That's $2 billion of revenue a year. And that's considered an abject failure by Wall Street.
We're really, they're not making enough money?
They're not supposed to make money. That's the problem. If they make money, then you've got to be taxed on it. That's revenue. They don't want revenue. They want growth.
Wait, explain the difference between growth and revenue.
There's the number of users on Twitter has stopped. It's now a great, sustainable, viable, revenue-based business. That means it's sort of standing still as far as investors are concerned. Investors buy stocks, and they don't want to get dividends from those stocks. They don't want earnings. They want the stock price to go up because that's an easy way to make money and not pay taxes. Your stocks go up. You want to see that line go up. You know, growth, we value growth. We think growth is the way to get richer, to do better, to make our country great. Grow, grow, grow. But it turns out growth of shares is very different from having a healthy, sustainable, revenue-generating business. And that confusion, really, is at the core of why our digital economy is not rewarding people.
I want to take you back for a moment to the Twitter example, because you actually know one of the co-founders, Evan Williams, right?
Yeah, I actually know a couple of them. I mean, I knew him when he was, you know, just looking for that next $100 to get, you know, to keep his servers up. You know, but when I saw him on the cover of the Wall Street Journal the morning that Twitter had its IPO, and they had the number 4.3 billion under his face, you know, which is the amount of money he earned that morning.
Wait, so one day he was suddenly $4.3 billion richer?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to feel good. I mean, it's yeah. Because they went public. But, you know, I was also sad for him because I realized by taking $4.3 billion, he was going to surrender his company to this growth trap that now he was having investors who were expecting what they call 100x or 1000x returns. They put in money at that $4.3 billion, but they did it because they wanted the company to be worth $400 billion within a year or two. You know, that's what they wanted, was growth, not revenue. And I realized he had really given up his company, that he had, in some sense, killed the dream. Because now Twitter, which is a successful company doing what it does, is going to be forced to do this very dot-com thing that they call pivoting. When a company pivots, it means get out of that business that you're in, that revenue-generating business, and go towards growth. Even if you have to cannibalize yourself, sell off your most productive assets, sell your good businesses so that your share price will go up, and then we can sell our shares to the next round of investors. Hmm. And you keep doing that until the company's dead.
Well, let's talk about another example. I mean, you know, one of the hot tech companies is Uber, the ride-hailing service. I mean, you have argued that ultimately this is not a business about getting people to their destination. It's a business model. Do you want to explain
that? It's a very particular business model too. I mean, the thing when you take venture capital at the of the amount that these young startups are taking it, it's not in order for them to become successful businesses. It's in order for them to become what's known as a platform monopoly. That means you establish a complete and total monopoly in a particular area, like Amazon did with books, and then you leverage that monopoly to go into someone else's business, like streaming media or cloud services or big box retail.
So you're saying in Uber's case, I mean, basically the model is to drive all the taxi companies out of business, and then you get control over that whole industry?
Right. So because they don't really plan on making money in the taxi industry, what they do is they use their war chest of cash to undercut everybody else in the business, put every other taxi company out of business. Even if you don't make a profit doing that, doesn't matter if you make a profit. It doesn't matter if the drivers can stay alive doing it. It doesn't matter if you destroyed ride sharing and taxis, as long as you leverage your monopoly into another industry before you've completely killed the first one.
It's a fairly cynical way of looking at things. I mean, I don't know
it's
what
not cynical.
I don't know
it's
what
just,
Uber
I mean,
would say in response to that critique, that they don't actually, you know, they don't care about giving people rides.
That's not their business. That's not their job. Their job is to return 100x or 1,000x returns to their investors. The only real problem with the system, other than that it's kind of destructive and stupid, the only real problem with it is that they don't take anyone into account other than the capital investor. You know, there used to be these three, what they called factors of production. That's the three things that you need for any business to happen. You need land, you need labor, and you need capital. So land is the place where it's happening, the town in which you're running your taxis, where you need roads in order for those taxis to run. There's the labor, who are the drivers, and there's the capital, which is the war chest that you use. Now, when you only value the war chest, you end up with disenfranchised labor, which is what we're seeing, people who can't earn enough driving Uber cars to keep themselves alive. And you end up with capitalists, with the people who are putting in the money, making all the decisions and getting all the returns.
Well, let's talk about workers for a moment. So you're saying that we need to take care of the workers. You know, they need to be part of this process, I mean, to benefit from all of this. What can be done to make work more rewarding, both in the monetary sense and in terms of what people want to do?
Well, the easiest thing is to make your workers owners of the company. There's a competitor to Walmart in the Western United States now called Winco. And Winco is beating Walmart in every market where they're competing head to head. And the funny thing is Winco pays its workers more and is a worker-owned cooperative. So instead of being owned by distant shareholders or the New York Stock Exchange, it's owned by the people who work there. So they not only pay themselves more as their bosses, but when the company makes money by, even if it's by exploiting them, they make money on the back end as the shareholders in the company. So you end up rewarded for all that overtime or anything that seemed uncompensated up front.
But why are they beating Walmart then? I mean, can they compete with Walmart in terms of prices?
They can compete with Walmart in terms of prices. And that's the thing that the Walmart people ask me. How could they compete with us in terms of prices if they're paying their workers more? This doesn't make sense. The reason why it makes sense is because they're not taking 90% of their revenue and handing it over to the shareholders. They don't have these millions of people passively making money off the company by simply owning shares.
Are you basically saying that that companies shouldn't go public?
If you have any choice, no, you should not go public. You should try to stay private where you can maintain some control over your company. Or we need to change the underlying code, the underlying bylaws of corporations, so that you're allowed to do something legally other than increase the share price. when you're legally bound as a CEO to promote share price over everything else, you end up destroying your company. That's what the CEOs of the Fortune 100 tell me every time I meet one. I'm killing my company because I have to show growth for my shareholders. I'm selling off our most productive assets. I'm amputating our best limbs. I'm cannibalizing our company because I have to show growth. I wish there was a way I could convince them that we could be a successful company for the next 20 years if you don't force me to kill it right now.
So let's play this out a little bit. I mean, suppose a bunch of people realize what you've just been talking about, that especially in the digital economy, that, you know, there's something corrupt, there's something sort of withering about all of this, and, you know, the end game is not going to work out. What's the alternative? How could things be structured differently?
Well, the easy ones are things like platform cooperatives, where you have your workers own the platform. So if Uber, before they went public, if they said, look, we're going to take 10% of our shares and give them to the drivers commensurate with how much they actually drove, that changes the whole equation. And that's a completely easy one. Of course, you could start a company from scratch that way, where your users are your owners. The difference between an industrial age economy and a digital age economy is that digital technology is distributed. It's networked. So the way you want to do business in a distributed age is to make your users rich. So that would be something like YouTube, say. YouTube right now gives a teeny little bit of the ad revenue that people get off their videos. It'll give it back to the person who put up the video.
Right.
It should be 50-50. If they did a 50-50 deal, could you imagine how many people are going to start making videos right. and trying to go in there and become part of that thing?
Yeah, right.
My mantra, really, for when I go and talk to these companies is make your users rich. Think eBay, which has millions of users who are dedicated to the platform because the platform has allowed them to generate income in a way that they really couldn't do that before. I mean, I don't mean to be sad. I'm actually happy because people are getting this. Developers are getting this. And they're realizing that the easy way to have a successful company is just take less money to begin with so that you're not beholden to these venture capitalists to pivot your business to some really awful thing which doesn't match what your initial intention was.
Douglas Rushkoff is the author of Throwing Rocks at the Google Bus, How Growth Became the Enemy of Prosperity. He talked with Steve Paulson